Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings to the UN delegation. Initially, I wish to thank the members of the working group of experts on people of African descent who prepared and filed an amicus brief in my case. And of course, the delegation of jurists, lawyers, and scholars from the UN International Independent Expert Mechanism to advance racial justice and equality in law enforcement, now visiting the United States. I specifically want to greet the delegation members, Justice Yvonne Mukguru, formerly of the South African Constitutional Court, the Lesotho Appeals Court, and Supreme Court of Namibia. Dr. Tracy L. Kesey of the National Initiative for Building Community Trust and Justice, a project of the DOJ. And human rights law professor Juan E. Mendez, also an expert on torture. Welcome. I begin this brief message with a simple question. What does justice look like? A simple answer might be found etched in stone in the edifice of the U.S. Supreme Court, equal justice under law, or even simpler, the idea that all people are treated equally before the law. Do you know what Judge Albert Samo thought of justice? You won't have to wonder long. In open court, in a PCRA hearing in 1996, he said, justice is just an emotional feeling. It shouldn't surprise us, coming from a judge who was a life member of the FOP. If justice is treating all people equally, the report of the group Amnesty International, which reviewed this case, found many instances where state courts ignored their own precedent to deny relief in my case. If the system treats someone unequally, what do we call that? Indeed, one of the judges in my federal appeal wrote, I see no reason why this court should not afford Abu Jamal the courtesy of our precedents, but deny me their precedents, they did. What do you call that? I've been reading scholars and philosophers lately. They call this a state of exception. That means that some laws apply to almost all, except for those for whom it doesn't. These are, well, exceptions. Everyone has the right to a fair trial, except some. Everyone has the right to an impartial jury, except some. Everyone has the right to due process, except some. My brothers and sisters call it the Mumia exception. My case exists in a state of exception. Indeed, when the United States ignored the Constitution after Reconstruction for 100 years for black people, this was a mass state of exception. And after a federal judge called the death penalty unconstitutional in my case, I spent 10 years on death row on an unconstitutional death sentence. Or a state of exception. It's past time to abolish all states of exception. I thank you for your attention and your time. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet, and of course that was none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. As you can tell and has heard, the United Nations did in fact write what's known as a amicus brief. And that, of course, is important because anything that lends to or that helps bring about greater awareness, and certainly that helps to put things in place in the struggle, in the fight for Mumia's freedom, of course, it's all applicable. It is all very, very important and necessary. There are some who say, well, you know, interacting with the United Nations, you know, what is that going to do? What you know, that's not going to help and all of that. And you know, and I tend to say to people, please tell me what your plan is. Because if you don't have one, if you don't have something else that you're talking about doing, then you really need to shut up. I mean, at this stage of the game, these kinds of things have to be said, and people have to be addressed that, for whatever reason, want to lessen the work, the consistency, et cetera, of folk that are continuously doing certain things to fight our people here in the U.S. and abroad. And so, again, you just heard Mumia thanking those who participated in the writing of his amicus brief. Certainly, again, this is an educational tool, if nothing else, but it's much more than that. And I can tell you because right now one of my brothers, he should be there now. He's in the Cameroon. And it is the work of our brothers and sisters who are literally in the grassroots kinds of activities. My brother Darrell is in Detroit. Well, he lives in Detroit. And he does a lot of work in the hood dealing with environmental justice. Of course, when they were going through the water situation there in Detroit and of course, in Flint. He was very, very active in environmental justice. He travels nationally and internationally dealing with the issue of racism in terms of environment. He also works in terms of political prisoners. And so my point is, but people know him in the community. So what we must begin to do, family, is evaluate what are folks actually doing? Because the connection of certain kinds of things is not really being matriculated in the hood, in our community. So that's one of the things we're going to talk about a little more tonight as we observe and of course, review Africa Day, which is for many now African Liberation Day. And again, there is a major emphasis placed on an international scope in terms of African liberation. But how is that really being observed or even taught in our community? Do the masses of our people know about African Liberation Day? And what mechanisms are established in our communities to make sure that they do and can participate? I can tell you, it's minimal. And so these are some of the things that we must begin to look at. If we're talking about and thinking about freedom in such a way that we're in the 21st century, which means you can't do this in a kind of vacuum in just one location. You can't do that anymore, not in this day and age. And so it behooves us to realize we have to now connect the black dots on an international level. With that said, we're going to talk very shortly with Sister Sheila Brown, who just recently came back from Geneva and is also participating next week along with myself for one of the upcoming permanent forum sessions. The United Nations is now still in what's known as the International Decade for African People. Again, who knows about that? Why aren't our so-called elected officials at least providing us with information about such things? And how can those things help us in our neighborhoods? Well, I'm going to answer some of those questions for you a little later on as well. But again, we're going to talk to Sister Sheila Brown, who's going to be doing what's known as a side session. There are official sessions, which, of course, you have to kind of be credentialed and blah, 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 in order to go into those sessions. But then there are what's known as side sessions or parallel sessions where the communities at large are able to participate. And this is what we're talking about. That's the kind of interaction that has to happen. You have to deal with certain things on one level, but at the same time, make certain that the masses have some kind of access. So next week in New York, there will be sessions again for the United Nations and particularly what's known as the Permanent Forum on African Peoples. And again, Sister Sheila will be doing a parallel session. And the parallel session is going to be on preparedness. Emergency response and preparedness. This is so important, family, because when we saw Katrina, when we saw COVID, certainly that suggested that we need to do a little more in our communities in terms of being a little more prepared for stuff. We certainly were not, obviously. And so with Sister Sheila, she has developed not only a program, but I mean, well, you're going to hear about it tonight, but these are the kind of things that MWM is now taking throughout our communities. Starting now that it's summer, starting next month, we will begin to go to various cities and bring our plan of action, bring our program, what we call the Black Print Agenda 25. So that the things that you heard us talk about, you are now going to begin to not only hear us talk about it more, but literally see what it is that we're talking about, and we're going to be bringing it into fruition. While we're waiting for, we're going to also talk with Brother Lee. Brother Lee from Africa on the Move is going to be joining us tonight, and he had a wonderful program earlier today. And again, it focused on Africa Day / African Liberation. And one of the things that was discussed today was the issue of classism, which, you know, for many people who are advocates or embracers of what's known as Pan-Africanism, then, of course, the issue of classism is definitely one of the major things that is not only looked at, but is understood as being a hindrance to us as a people. The other issues, of course, deal with capitalism and colonialism. So what I'd like to ask you, family, before we bring Brother Lee in, and again, we're going to talk about his program earlier today, but we're going to also talk with him about a few other things. And this is what I'm raising to you as well, and that is, in the ideas and concepts of Pan-Africanism, how can we move that forward in the 21st century? Should it be moved forward in the 21st century? Is this a philosophy or a thought process that we feel is going to be beneficial to us as a people? And with that said, are there any other ideologies or philosophies that we have that lends to or helps to bring about our liberation? So that's a question to you all, meaning, is Pan-Africanism something that we need to be embracing today? And if so, should it be upgraded or remain as it is? Is it something that you feel our people should know more about and become more involved in? Are there some other ideologies or concepts that should be brought forward to help our people to obtain justice and liberation? So if you have a comment or a response to that, please press 1 now. And the other question, too, is, well, not so much as question is, big shout out to Sister Keisha Feral Black Talk. You know, one of the things that you've heard us talk about over the years is holidays. We call them horror days. And certainly, you know, kind of ask the question, why are people still observing some of these so-called European holidays? You've heard us play Ashaka Musso on numerous occasions that talks about, excuse me, European holidays. So with that said, it was good to hear Sister Keisha's program on Thursday, because Memorial Day actually is one of the days that was not really started by white folks. And so she brought a lot of good information, and we've done that previously on a few years back, I think, excuse me, on New Day, but it was good to really hear the succinct information that she brought about. We're going to review some of that tonight, and with that said, want to ask the question, how are we remembering our ancestors? And what I mean by that is, oftentimes we hear their names, but where is the work that's being done that exemplifies what some of them taught, stood for, and died for, particularly in more recent times? So those are some of the questions we want to bring to your attention tonight. But let me see. Okay, we got a few folks that have a response, so let's do this again. Pan-Africanism, is that something we should be embracing? And if not, what should we be embracing that lends to an ideology, a concept, a philosophy, and so forth? The other question is this something that we need to promote more or develop further? What are your thoughts, family? Let's go to our live line, and we're going to go to caller at 9498-9498. Oops, your mic is now open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Good evening, Sister Filet.
Hey, Brother Ray Ray. How you been?
Okay, all right. Hello, Philadelphia and listening family of the Million Women's March. I saw Keisha today at the BAM. We hung out for a little while. I didn't have Nawel with me, but I had lyrics. So I saw Keisha and her husband, and we hung out at BAM. And the funny thing about BAM is they closed. It's white folks that have a lot to do with the BAM Street Festival down in Flatbush Avenue, and they closed the street down. And you know, the vendors are able to make their money.
Uh-huh.
The people could get there via transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And buses, and the majority of transportation is clobbered right there, so the vendors are able to make their money back.
Uh-huh.
But when we used to have it at around Boys High Field, you know, they would close the street down, but they stopped it for us, for the African Art Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved it all the way out of the main transportation area to Navy Park, where it's no transportation.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people come, but a lot of people don't come. It's basically the black one.
Right.
And the vendors don't get they have a hard time getting their money back.
Wow.
And I saw a few people from the African Art Festival there.
Because
mm-hmm. Keisha had mentioned it on her show. So I have the grandkids rolling with me, and they ready to roll.
Right. Yes.
They jump. They ready to roll. So I said, let me go down there. I wasn't doing nothing, you know. But when it comes to the African Art Festival, it's all on the side. And the vendors have a hard time getting the money that they spend, you know, setting up.
You know, Brother Ray Ray, it's interesting because in a lot of cities where there used to be, you know, vendors on the street, like here in Philly, we had a whole strip that was like two blocks long, mm-hmm. pretty much, and it had vendors. And what we've noticed is that over the past, I would say 10 years, cities have been really destroying you know, our people's capability to be self-determined, to make their own money. And they're putting mm-hmm. all these restrictions on them and all kinds of things. And so, you know, when I was coming up, that the merchants on the street, the so-called street, and see, we didn't call them vendors. They were merchants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the word mm-hmm. vendor kind of came a little later, but our people were merchants, and they literally, that's how they lived. That's how they survived. So it wasn't like, you know, mm-hmm. Just they literally would work in the winter, a lot of them, you know, particularly the ones that made their own mm-hmm. different things. They would work in the winter, and then come summer, they was on the road. They would go all over the country mm-hmm. to different festivals and events. But my point is, when the system saw how productive, how independent, and all of that our brothers and sisters were, they started putting all these restrictions, started creating all these different kind of ways for them not to be able to set up. And I think that happened also, wasn't there like a mart in New York where all the vendors used to be?
Yeah, that's when they moved. They put them in a little area past the main hub. But people wasn't going, you know, they wasn't going all the way down there. That's when they started driving all the vendors off. Now, funny thing about the merchants, vendors, and this is how the elected officials don't look out in our favor, and they always favor the people that control them. As Darren Muhammad says, you could buy five twerking black officials and get two free. I love Darren Muhammad. I don't care what nobody have to say about him, his State of the City. You know, so in Washington Heights, Espinal or Estrada, whatever his name is, who Charlie, everybody was under the impression that Charlie Rangel was black. Charlie Rangel gave Harlem to the Dominicans.
Wow.
Now, when me and Mike was coming from, when we used to come from the Sea Alton, we used to drive through Washington Heights. Now, one thing that the gangsters and the drug boys, the Dominican drug boys, they know how to wash their money. In Washington Heights, all the restaurants, there's very few outside businesses in Washington Heights. Underground economy where they could sell anything they want on the street, on 180th Street, St. Nicholas, Amsterdam. And we drove down, family, we drove down Broadway, and they have a lot of car washes, but they're vans. In other words, they're vans, and they don't have car washes.
Right.
They got vans where they wash your car by hand.
Wow.
And we counted, and let me make this quick, we counted 10 vans down Broadway in a 8 to 9 block radius. And nobody was fighting. Nobody was arguing. And all of them was eating. It was all washing. The Dominicans would take their cars there and get them washed. And
wow.
You would have people were selling stuff, selling everything from food to old clothes. They sell old clothes, old tools on the street. So they have an underground economy, and the representative has a, Senator Espinat has a relationship with the police department up there, and they hustle and they don't bother them. They didn't run them off the street like they ran us off the street. In Harlem, on Fulton Street, in 125th Street. This is how ass wipes our black politicians are. In Washington
wow.
Heights, they have their own economy. They
right.
have their own restaurants, no outsiders. They all Dominican restaurants. They take their drug money and they wash it through the restaurants. Now, they used to do that in the old days where the old black hustlers and gangsters would find a legitimate person that had a job, and they would take their money, and the establishment would be in the name of the person that was clean, had no record, and they would, that's how they washed their money. We don't
right.
have enough sense to, for some strange reason, we don't have enough sense to study. We take the names of the Italian criminals, but we don't have enough sense to study organized crime and how they do it. But we take the Italian names. Nobody wants to study Bumpy Johnson.
Right.
Get back to Pan-Africanism. It's supposed to be
mm-hmm.
to strengthen. But what happened? It seemed like it had to be, it wasn't unity in the motherland. It was
mm-hmm.
unity, but then it wasn't unity.
Right.
So it was easy to split us up.
Mm.
A lot of people go to the BAM Street Festival, Philadelphia, but they don't go to the African Art Festival.
Mm.
When we have it on the fourth of July,
right?
So we still I don't care what holiday. These people done killed us and murdered our people during the pandemic with what they did, and I will keep saying it. I don't care what nobody says. It happened under the Democratic Party. I don't care if they say, I do not care if they say it ain't no different between a Democrat and a Republican. But if the Republicans was in and all this stuff was happening, we would blame it on the Republicans. We wouldn't say it's the same party. We would say them stinking Republicans are doing it. But when the
right.
Democrats is doing it, they saying it's all the same. So they done killed our families, our loved ones in the hospitals with the ventilators, with the slab, and then they tell you to celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day. And you done killed my father in the hospital and didn't let me go see him after you put
yeah.
the ventilator on him, and we go out and still celebrate. So we can't get away from this white man. We cannot get away from this white man. And then when blacks get in the office, they just as dirty as the white man, even dirtier. So I told the person, I don't care what you say. Don't tell me nothing about no Donald Trump and this and that with what these twerking Negroes are doing, because they get in there and they do worse.
All
and
right,
they
my
still
brother.
Say celebrate these holidays, and we do it.
That's right. All right, Brother Ray Ray. Well, listen,
we do it,
you.
Sister Filet, in Philadelphia. We celebrate that white man. When that white man say do it, black folks do it.
No, I know.
Let me get off my soapbox. Good to be on, but what it is what it is. Thank you.
You got that right. Thank you, my brother. All right, family, of course, that was our brother Ray Ray, New York. You know, again, we are in serious trouble, needless to say. And what our role and job now is to figure this stuff out to the best of our ability and get it done, because we don't want to leave this on our children and their children to the extent that it is. So we've got to step it up. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Okay, I see Brother Lee is in queue, so we're going to bring Brother Lee in. And again, we were talking about and raising the question about Pan-Africanism. Is that something that we feel today we need to strive for, we need to embrace? How do we get our people more involved? And if not Pan-Africanism, what? What are we talking about? A philosophy, methodology, or whatever that we need to embrace, if not Pan-Africanism? You know, and I've heard people say things, some of the various new groups, organizations, I've heard them say certain kinds of things, but at the same time, I don't hear any plans of action, and I'm going to keep pushing for that. But anyway, Brother Lee had an excellent, excellent program today. For his program or his blog talk, Africa on the Move and Missing Pages of History are the two that he does. And today's was really, really good. It focused on African Liberation Day. And, of course, it's also known as Africa Day initially. And so we're going to talk about that a bit, get a little history about that. What I'm learning is we have selected memories. And we also have selected history. You know, folks select history that they want to remember for some reason. I guess that's, a human thing or whatever. But I find it now to be more annoying, meaning, to not really study our history with the intention of examining it so that we can really learn from it, also advance it. Meaning when we see that certain things were accomplished, when we see that certain things did benefit us, what's the next step? And so we're not apparently dealing with history in a manner that is, really kind of productive for us. But anyway, we'll get back to that later. Let's go to the live line and let's talk with Brother Lee Robinson, Africa on the Move, and also Missing Pages of History. Today's topic focused on, of course, African Liberation Day. And again, what does that mean to us? What should it mean to us? Let's have that conversation. Hey, Brother Lee, how you doing tonight?
Sister, I'm doing great when I can hear your voice. Welcome to Africa Liberation Day 2023. We're going to talk about what we need to talk about the most, and that is, for this year, Pan-Africanism, Waging Class Struggle in Africa and the Diaspora, Fighting for One Unified Socialist Africa. That's what we've been talking about all this weekend as the AAPIPGC celebrate African Liberation Day. And it basically just said that we are one people with one history and one destiny. You must understand that Africa must be primary. And I repeat, it must be primary. If we are seeking our total liberation as a people on a global perspective. Mm-hmm. It's like anything else, Sister Empress. As a doctor, if you want to solve the problem, you don't treat the symptoms. You go to the origin of it.
Right.
The origin of our problem started in Africa. It did not start in the United States. It did not start in Philadelphia. It did not start in Richmond, Virginia. It did not start in California. It did not start in Brazil. It did not start in Cuba. It did not start in Europe. So at the bare minimum, history is best reward those who research. If you go and search your history, you'll find out. It wasn't until 1884-85 where the Europeans came to Africa and carved up Africa into these weak microstates that we see today. At the same time, they agreed upon a collective plan globally where whatever institutions they create, there'll be institutions geared towards their oppression. The same brothers and sisters who shoot you down the streets in the United States today are the same brothers and sisters, if you want to call them that, they shoot our brothers and sisters down in Brazil, shooting our brothers and sisters down in Haiti, shooting their brothers and sisters down. I mean, you name it. It's the same people, same system, which is skilled by the same ideas, which we call ideology, the way of thinking. So for our people, they think that, you know, we have had over 100 years of history of Pan-Africanism. The first conference started in 1900 back in England. We had many Pan-African congresses and conferences since 1900. But we do say that one of the greatest Pan-African conference took place was in 1945 in England. And that was the fifth Pan-African conference where the idea that Africans must come together, see themselves in one, and change the destiny of Africa in terms of fighting off the yokes of the European imperialism inside Africa. It was chaired by Kwame Nkrumah. You had people like Jomo Kenyatta. You had many young African leaders then who was at the conference, went back to Africa, taking the whole idea of Africa's being one, Franklin one, back into Africa. And, you know, Guinea received their independence in 1957, and not Guinea, Ghana received their independence, which in 1957, which Kwame Nkrumah became the first president. And Guinea received theirs a year later, 1958, by Secretary Ray. We said those two countries, because those two countries played a very significant role in spearheading the whole thrust of Pan-Africanism. One of the things that really interests, I read an article not too long ago, they may have a book out, but they were talking about the U.S. staged a coup, the CIA staged a coup against Kwame Nkrumah. They say he was the most threatening individual in the world because his ideas and what he was doing on the continent. And they even talk about, people don't realize, they talk about one man can't make a difference. Sometimes one man can make a big difference. They was talking about the impact that his coup had on the rest of African world is still being felt today. Nkrumah, in 1964, at the Organization of African Unity, May 25th, they were founded. In his presentation, listen to his speech, he told all these Africans, so-called leaders, that they must quickly organize into one unit. And you couldn't have one country on the outside being independent, because even if you have one country, the Europeans, not the Europeans, but the system of capitalism, will find its way to undermine the whole continent. That if you didn't do it, you could find yourself, all of us, in bondage, what you see today. If you study his speech, what he said, everything came true to what we live in today. You know, most of Africa, 95% of Africa, is not free. That's the freedom among our people, among the countries of Africa. This is illusion of freedom that you're looking at. For example, some countries they can call their name. It's many countries, but we have a tendency to Africa. He'll say, "Let's go there," because you know, this country's doing this. This country's great. This country's about the people. And the problem with that country, like most countries, is that they say they are doing so many things in terms of this question called development. But how do you have real development, Sister Empress, when it's still mostly 95% of your economy is still controlled by forces on the outside?
Right.
How do you have development, Sister Empress, when in your own country, in your education system, the students don't read one book about their president? It's not allowed. It's not allowed in 2023 today. How does this kind of situation exist if you're truly talking about real liberation and freedom?
Right.
If you're talking about development, talking about freedom, and Nkrumah back in the 60s was industrializing Ghana, you know, back in the 60s, they had all kind of industrialization in the process of plants and stuff where the Africans were developing and creating and being able to produce and be more competitive on the world global where you have surplus of production, where you can change, you create, you know, a sense of wealth. But the problem is, even after today, most of Africa is still not industrialized. As long as you don't have an industrial base, it becomes very difficult for you to truly compete economically in this global market, in this global affair. Africa has been used in the past like it's been used today, just as a material base for Western imperialism. It's a material base, and their position is it will stay that way. Our question is, how do we change that? How do we change that? You can't change it based upon the size of these little microstates. They don't have the resource and means to compete on these global markets financially.
Right.
So wouldn't it be a lot more easier? You come together, work at one, you collect your resource, your thoughts, your energies, everything, and use that as a power block, function as one single entity to fight for your own interests. What you think NATO is about, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the
right.
European Common Market. All of them have concepts that say let's work as a block, as a group, and we compete against others so we can dominate others. So Pan-Africanism is it's no other alternative. Either that or you'll perish. And right now, if we don't understand that, we're definitely on the course of perishing if we don't understand it. But I think at this point in time, like all things, wherever there's oppression, there'll be resistance. Africa is fighting. Africa is making victories. A lot of times we'll see our victories. But the final analysis is that, as they say, when Africa suffers, that's good for Europe. It's good for capitalism. It's good for Western Europe. Good for the U.S. when Africa suffers. But when Africa is not suffering, striving, guess what happened to the rest of the world, particularly the Western Europeans? It's bad for them. So we have a dialectical relationship. What's good for us is bad for them. What's bad for us is good for them. So we must understand the dynamics, Sister Empress.
Right.
I just stopped right there.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, that puts it pretty simply and pretty clearly. You had a brother on today. I think it's he has a news wire. He's based out of Detroit. His name escapes me for the moment. But
Yes.
And I'm familiar with him because he's been around for a while. But
yeah.
He said something that was, you know, pretty poignant, pretty right there. And I want to know what your thought is about that, because you were kind of just letting people, you know, share their thoughts and views today. And so I want to ask you particularly about him. He said something that others have also said, and even Brother Malcolm said it years ago, and it is that there's not going to be any real development in terms of liberation, in terms of, you know, independence and so forth, without there being bloodshed. What are your thoughts about that?
It's no way around it. You have to have bloodshed. And in our history, we shouldn't be shocked and surprised, because that has been our history.
Right.
Not something that we have created, but that's the situation you find ourselves in. Based upon
right.
the transatlantic slave trades and Europe coming to Africa. Everything African people have done in this country, if you look probably around the world, everything that African people have done when they so-called have made some petty advancement, and I say petty, a lot of times called advancements are really reforms, they're not really real advancement, they had to shed blood. There's no way around it. They have to shed blood. Those who have the power, not giving it up. They're not going to give it up through a vote. They're not going to give it up by begging. They're not going to give it up if you pray. They're not going to do it, because the way they got the power was through bloodshed, by force. If someone come and defeat you by force, it leaves a reality that in order to get back what they took or get back based upon how you was colonized, you have to understand how you're colonized. You have to take it. You have to understand that if it were taken by force, you have to use force to get it back.
Right.
We don't have no other choice. We don't have no other choice. Why you think in over 53 African countries now, the U.S. and AFRICOM is in at least 52 countries. They have the military in each African country, even though we played a major role in that, in terms of the neocolonial leadership that were developed after the so-called illusion of African independence period. What the hell you think you would do with the military when you ask them to get out? Do you think they can take orders just because you tell them to get out?
Right.
It's just like a bully. You know, when you take your stuff and you actually want to give your stuff back, he don't understand anything but force.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, but Nkrumah said, Secretary said the truth. Even Kwame Ture used to say, capitalism will find the tombstone in Africa. We knew, Nkrumah knew, that this would take place in Africa. They would come to Africa. They would have to deal with it. And unfortunately, at this point in time, the reality is that, you know, we would need to organize our forces and create, as Marcus Garvey said, our own international military to fight for our interests. And revolution is on the way. We're going to have to find a way to defeat them on the battlefield. They took it by force, so, you know, he made a critique of looking at our problem at some point in time. It will have to take place, maybe not in their lifetime, but it will have to take place if we have a real liberation.
Wow. All right. Well, with that said, family, I'm going to open up the mic for you all. If you have a question or a comment for Brother Lee, you certainly can ask that now. You know, it's unfortunate that it is what it is. I mean, that's all we can say. And in reality, the various countries that did obtain some level of independence, you know, during the 60s in particular, had to fight in order for that to happen. That didn't just happen because these people wanted to relinquish or to give, you know, some control or power back to our people. Folks had to fight for that. And I want to remind people about the fact that our women were also on those front lines. Okay, so these folks here that's talking all this stuff about, you know, our sisters need to not do this and not do that and all of that, Negroes, please. That's all I can say. You obviously don't really understand the nature of the game. When folks are at war, it is all hands on deck. Anyway, let's go to our live line, and I'm going to go back to Brother Ray Ray real quick. I think he might have a quick question or comment. Go ahead, Brother Ray Ray.
Well, the man is 100% right. And John Henry Clark said, Pan-Africanism or perish. But you got the Arabs. You got the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
You got the European. You just had this supposed to be this hooking up with, I saw a picture of, I think it was Mbeki, South Africa, the Chinese guy, Russia. Is the people from South Africa going to benefit? The Jews with the diamonds? They feasting off of the continent. And I remember Amos said it, and I couldn't understand it because, I don't know, and he said, we're going to fall out of the hands of the European and into the hands of the Asians. And the man is 100% right. If they took it by force, they ain't giving it back.
Right.
So we're supposed to be the greatest builders. You have Doc Ben, Browder, and all these individuals talking about the greatness, the historians, the pyramids, the different civilizations, Timbuktu, Mali, Sun Guy, you name it, and they paid an Asian to build a statue in Ghana. How many billions of dollars did they pay? The greatest builders of the world paid an outsider to build that piece of garbage over there. And you're talking about the greatness. How many billions did the state of Ghana pay some outsiders to build that big statue of a strong African man? Is it in Ghana, Sister Filet?
I believe so.
Is it in Ghana?
I believe so.
I think you know, Chinks built that.
We saw the same thing here when they did the Dr. King statue monument.
Exactly.
And
is that all and, bent up looking
and he
didn't know what
Asian.
The hell it was.
If you look at it closely, he looks very Asian. But anyway, all right, Brother Ray Ray,
the gentleman is 100% right. We ain't got no army. We ain't taking back nothing.
All right. Thank
it
you, my brother.
It ain't going to happen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go to caller 6029. 6029, your mic is now open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Sister Empress.
Hey, Brother
Hakeem. Show you right.
Did you see my text message before you start? Did you see my text message to you earlier today?
No, I didn't see it. What's going on?
Oh, you gotta take a no. I ain't telling you. You gotta take a look at it. I text you after I came on Brother Lee's program earlier today. But
I didn't get it.
When you get a chance, check it out. And let me know if you don't see it. I'll send it again. But yeah. But anyway, what's your comment?
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. Well, listen. You know me. I got to keep it 100. Let's be very very clear. let's be very very clear. When we talk about the problems that our people endure in society, let's be very very clear. A lot of time, our people believe that the problems that we're confronted with are going to be resolved by the system at large. In that context, Sister Empress, you know, the bottom line is that a lot of our people don't want to hear anything about in terms of, you know, self-determination or autonomy. They don't want to hear anything of those such concepts because the notion that, in fact, that they're capable or certainly the responsibility lies with them in terms of bringing about real change in our communities. It's a message they don't want to hear. And a lot of that is buttressed by the fact that, you know, and I got to be real about this. We got to understand the nature of the colonial mentality in our people. That slave mentality is real.
Mm-hmm.
And see, until we figure out a way in terms of combating that, which is a very difficult situation, because people with a colonial or slave mentality are not going to acknowledge they have a slave mentality. It manifests in terms of what they do, what they say, how they act, the positions that they take. So you know how they're thinking. But they're not going to acknowledge is a function of a slave mentality. Conservatives would say that their thoughts are independent, that they're not glued to something as simple as simplistic as the color of their skin, that they're free to articulate views as they see fit because they're individual human beings. Of course, if you really dissect that position and you look at terms of the history of America, and then to say that, in fact, that you're an independent human being in the context of American skin, then you realize that this notion that they're pushing about truly being independent is just a smokescreen for the reality is that attempt to conceal what they really feel in terms of self. And that is a fundamental problem that we're confronted with. So you talk about that slave mentality that gets down people. And so you raise the question in terms of what do we educate our people in terms of Pan-Africanism? Well, we got to understand a couple of things. First, I think one of the things we have to understand in the context of America, there is this perception and this fact that we are somehow different. So when you and I say that, listen, we brought over here in chains, and that genotype, that genetic makeup of who we are never changed. In other words, we're Africans then and we're Africans now. For a lot of people, they reject that analysis. In Africa, given the educational system, I mean, and Brother Lee alluded to that, brothers and sisters in Africa are not learning a lot of stuff about what's going on in the world in terms of global politics. And that is sad, but that is the core reality. That is called reality. In fact, in a lot of these states, people don't even have access to libraries unless you're a college student. How crazy is that? How crazy is that? So we got this ignorance on both sides of the Atlantic. And one of the things, of course, there's an educational process that we try to get people to understand fundamentally, you know, what's at stake here and why understanding the reality of the situation is so key to their survival. But it's a process, because one of the things that you got to understand is that when you try to get people to understand the situation as it exists in society, it creates a lot of anxiety, a lot of tension, a lot of turmoil in the souls of people who have to contend with reality, is that to be an African person in America is not as simplistic as you one may think. Certainly when you try to compare Africans to other groups in terms of the historical treatment of African people, then you have to arrive at the fact that there's something fundamentally skewed in terms of the treatment that African people receive as opposed to others. But the problem is that in acknowledging that, the kind of anxiety, the kind of ill ease that it creates as a result of knowing that, people want to they'll reject anything that's going to call attention to the fact that there are some serious discrepancies in terms of the treatment of African people and the treatment of all others. It's much easier for them to believe that, listen, we're all Americans and everything is good. So anything that happens to African people is self-inflicted. They brought it on themselves. So when the cops shoot an unarmed African person, their position is that, well, they must have been doing something. You know, you said to them, well, they were unarmed. Yeah, but the police, you know, come on. I mean, the police wouldn't shoot them if they're unarmed. They must have been doing something. Maybe they threatened. You know, they'll come up with numerous excuses in terms of justifying why the cops shot an unarmed African person. I'm talking about African people, by the way.
Right.
You see, and then when we talk about the bourgeois element in African community, let's be clear. We cannot expect the bourgeois element in African community to come forward. Number one, they're too afraid of losing little status that they have. Secondly, they're too much afraid in terms of losing the pay slip that they receive. And so they are well heeled, you know, in terms of, you know, they're very much in tune to the ethos of the society. In other words, everything that is expected of them, these petty bourgeois elements in the African community internalize these elements. And so what it is to be an American, what it is to be born in America, as far as those bourgeois elements concerned, it is to accommodate or to go along with whatever the system says is okay. So you kill people, well, that's fine. You incarcerate large number of people, well, that's fine too. If people don't have access to food and shelter, people live on the street, well, it's their fault. You know, if they were like me, they wouldn't be in this predicament. And so therefore, I have no concern for them because they brought it on themselves. And it's much easier to believe that. Then you try to get them to understand the system that exists. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. And some of them just got to shake their head and just move on. You know, seriously. I'm not one to normally, you know, when I engage in discussion, just give up. I normally persist. I keep on until they get tired and they say, well, okay, I had enough, and then we'll conclude the discussion. But some of them, I give up. I say, damn, you know, I can't take it. You know what I mean? This kind of ignorance, this kind of self-hatred is just too deep. I can't penetrate this stuff. You know, it's going to take many, many years, conceivably, to have any impact on people with such a mindset. But finally, let me just say this, Sister Empress, and I conclude. One of the things we got to understand in the context of capitalist society, we understand under capitalism in terms of the profit motive. One of the things you have to do in terms of maximizing profit is to impose the maximum amount of injustice in society. In other words, to the extent that you can use and abuse people, or you can exclude people from the labor market, the more profit for you. In that context, you got to ask yourself, given the fact that this ethos in American society is all about the money, why do you think that anything that's going to cost them money will be implemented by people in positions of power? They're not going to do it. So when you say to these people, listen, people got a right to food and shelter, they got a right to education, they got a right to information. They look at you like, well, what kind of fool are you? They don't have those rights. This is a capitalist society. In fact, if we gave them those rights, those would undermine our ability to make profit. So why would we do that? So at some point, our people have to begin to realize that in the cold, hard reality in terms of the system is that it's not only anti-African, it's also anti-humane. And everything it does across the board, is geared toward the enhancement of profits. Nothing else really matters. It's not that very simple. And they use a few African people, give them some visibility, give them a few dollars, give them some visibility, and tell the Americans, right. I'll say, hey, be like them. And particularly when we talk about the athletes, no disrespect to the athletes, because I respect a lot of the athletes in terms of the position that they've recently taken, but they promote a lot of these guys who are quite frankly, uneducated when it comes to the struggle. But they hold them up as an example in terms of what children should be. In my community, they got a big sign for Kobe Bryant. And Kobe Bryant was cool, but as far as the movement is concerned, he made nothing definitive in terms of advancing the movement. So as far as I'm concerned, he's just a basketball player. But to the kids, he's an icon. The mere fact that these people voted this athlete as an icon, got big signs and everything in his name, and I shake my head. And I said, but you got all of these African revolutionaries who sacrificed, who gave up their lives, who did long terms in prison for the betterment of the community. Black children know absolutely nothing about them. And you people are happy with promoting this notion that our children can only be basketball players or football players. And so this bourgeois element is very much committed to the idea in terms of whatever the society says is what we do, is what we endorse. And so the question becomes, how do you fundamentally break that? I don't think there's no way possible to break that. And so this is a fundamental problem that we're confronted with. But I think it's important that people understand that given the nature of the beast and given the nature of the fact that this society, this system is deconstructing, when we talk about when you go to the store and prices are rising daily, not weekly, but prices are rising daily, you ask yourself, what the hell is going on here? They may tell you the system is going through a self-correction, but the bottom line is that this society is broke. That is, when you talk about the national debt being over $43 trillion, when you talk about the federal deficit being over, $30 trillion, the bottom line is that they're still coming back from that. And so when you talk about these military formations amassing throughout Africa in terms of maintaining control, it is the only way conceivable for them to maintain control. Now, at this point of the ballgame, everything is simply force. And this filters down to the community. So we talk about, arming police in terms of getting the latest weaponry in terms of, so-called policing the communities. That's no coincidence. That's by design. They understand in terms of capitalism's longevity, they're going to have to kill some people. And more importantly, what we have to understand, not only do they have to kill some people, but more importantly, you got to understand that at the same token, these people, positions of power, are constantly grooming the far right in terms of taking up arms and eliminating those people in the society they deem irrelevant. Those people who are not perceived as real Americans are deemed as irrelevant, and they are grooming them to kill large numbers of African people in society. We don't want to deal with this stuff. We don't want to deal with this stuff because it's just too painful to deal with. Because we want to believe that we're Americans.
Wow.
And the problem I have that when you elevate your nationality over your humanity, I have a fundamental problem with that. And for our people who continue to do that, we're more proud to be American and used and abused than to be a human being, a human being, full of pride, full of dignity, one who's not willing to compromise in terms of what it is to be a human being. When we when we elevate that nationalism over everything else, then we're comfortable with the fact that not only are we perceived as somehow lacking, but we're treated as though somehow our existence is esoteric or somehow unimportant. And so we got a lot of work to be done, but all that is psychological, and that's the problem that we're confronted with. And I think to a large extent that when capitalism deteriorates, I think a lot of this time, you know, what you and I is talking about, you and I and Brother Lee are talking about,
mm-hmm.
the system is going to show them firsthand exactly what we're talking about. I think it's going to take a lot of mass killings. I think it's going to take massive suffering for our people to come realize that there's something fundamentally wrong and they got to take a stand. Right now, they're convinced that if they pray enough, if they humble down to their supervisors, to their bosses enough, that everything's going to be all right. But understand one thing in terms of capitalism. When you talk about wages, one of the things that in terms of context of capitalism, one of the first things to go is always wages. In other words, when you impact those organizations' bottom line, then somebody got to go. Increasingly, people making tons and tons of money who always had that good life are now finding themselves, you know, unemployed, unemployable, because nobody's going to hire them. Nobody's going to pay them what they're accustomed to being paid. And so for our people, those who are making having meaningful salaries, that is not guaranteed. And they're so stressed out that they know that at some point they may come to office and may say, listen, we no longer need your services. You have a good day. And they're stressed out. And so what I'm saying is that we have to wait for a situation in which more and more of these people could, you know, have to contend with these kind of conditions, which sort of confirm the reality in terms of what it is to be an African person in society. It's only then when the mass of our people wake up and realize that this thing is very, very, very serious. My only concern is this, is that I'm concerned that by the point that they understand that things have to change, that we must have organization. But my biggest fear is that before they get to that point, it'd be too late. That is my fear. Mm-hmm. Because the far right is organizing like hell. When you look in terms of expenditures on weaponry and ammunition, them crackers are buying up everything. The stores have to restock. I mean, I read one article where they have to stock up weekly in terms of trying to keep up with the arms and ammunition sales. These people are not joking, man. These people are not joking. And then you got these far-right politicians who are constantly egging them on and telling them, listen, the problem is not capitalism. The problem is that these people of color, they're the problem, particularly these African people. They're the problem. You know, they're lazy. They don't want to work. They always make excuses. They don't love America, blah, 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 blah. You know, and they're eating that up because the question of racism has never really been resolved in the context of American society. And it's not going to be resolved as long as capitalism exists. That's what we have to fundamentally understand. With that, sister, I'm going to conclude, and I'm going to close, and I thank you for your time and your patience.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, my brother. So we're going to go back to Brother Lee and get his closing comments. I think I might see Sister Sheila in queue, who is our next person that's coming up to talk with us tonight. But Brother Haki, that was, whew. I mean, you know, I don't get speechless often. But, yeah, I mean, ain't nothing else for me to say on that one. I think you were pretty on point. I mean, hey, I'm going to go back to Brother Lee and get his closing comments. But thank you, brother. That was, I think, very well put, very clear. You know, a lot of times we have conversations about certain things, and you kind of have to, you know, kind of figure stuff out. But and what you just presented, I think that was relatively clear. So we give thanks. We give thanks. Brother Lee, your closing comments.
I have none. The brother was succinct. The only thing I can say to Africans around the world, like the sister said in one of those little YouTube videos. The other day I was looking at one. The little African sisters were telling the Africans to come back home. She stated that no matter where you're at, you now will be free and you now will have security. She said she didn't care where you was at. He said, only until you come back home, and when you're not at home, you will get the kind of freedom and the security that you're seeking. And you now be respected. And you won't be respected until Africa respects you. You won't be strong until Africa is strong. You won't be united until Africa is united. Africa is the base. As Brother Cabral said, return to the source. Africa is the base, and we must understand that. For example, you know, if you look at the strength of the Chinese man today and woman today, and not based upon them as the individual they are, it's based upon because they have a home. They have a country called China. That they are strong and unified. Malcolm used to always say that. You look at any people who are respected, they have a base they're respected. And Africans must look at our history. You keep telling us that. So, you know, we can run all we want, but at some point in time, we're going to have to deal with the objective history of our people that until Africa is free, unified, and socialist, every African around the world lacks a serious national home. The only way you can get freedom is to go back and free Africa. Now, when we say go back to free Africa, at the minimum, at least your allegiance, your ideas, your energies, all the things that you do must have some kind of way connected to Africa to make Africa be a free, unified, socialist state. Not a micro state with all these little 53 little entities that the Europeans created, but one whole unified continent. It must be done. It will be done. Question is, what would you do to about to make that happen? That's all. It's what's your role. But it's gonna happen. And Africans will take their rightful place in humanity by making sure that Africa is strong enough to not only protect itself, but also have the principles and the values of fighting any kind of injustice against any people, no matter where they are at. So on that note, you know, we say Pan-Africanism will perish. Organize. And before I leave, Sister Empress, let me make this quick remark to your audience. We're going to have a very important program tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on Africa on the Moon. We have this case called Alex Saab, who was a diplomat for Venezuela, acting on behalf of the Venezuelan government in terms of trying to commit to international trade. And he was kidnapped by the U.S., and taken to imprisonment in the U.S. in Florida right now. But the case is really interesting because what they're doing to Alex Saab means you all become expendable around the world with people now just go around and just kidnap you. So we want to just let your listening audience know that DEFA is part of our continuation for African Liberation Day. Please check in tomorrow night from 7 to 9 p.m. on Africa on the Moon and listen to this case. And right now, the U.S. and West are doing a very good job of trying to blockade the information on what's going on with this brother and the implication of what it means to the rest of the world. So check that out, and you can do that real simply by just picking up your phone and dialing 323-679-0841, or you can go online and check out Africa on the Moon. So other than that, brothers and sisters, you can do it. Let's strive to go forward, Albert, backwards, Neville. And as always, we too stay ready for the revolution.
Okay. All right, my brother. Give thanks. I thought I saw a caller, but I guess they dropped off. I thought they had a question or a comment for you. But and I'm waiting for Sister Sheila. Sister Sheila, if you can hear me, you need to press 1 now so that I can see that you are in queue. But at any rate, we've been talking with Brother Lee Robinson, Africa on the Move, and of course, Brother Haki.
Check this out, Sister.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Check this out, Sister. We talk about freedom, right? Let me give you a general, good definition of freedom. Someone once said that freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. Let me repeat that again. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. Now, if you take that concept and apply that to our reality, what do we have? What are the necessities of life? One of the necessities, we need food, right?
Yep.
Well, you know, Sister Empress, you know, right now, most of us, we don't even eat food no longer. Capitalism got so now that you don't eat food no longer. Most of all the stuff you eat now is not even food. It's stuff.
That's right.
The least you buy are shit that made out of laboratories. The best
that's
what
right.
you eat are shit that made out of the laboratory. The stuff you drink It's all kind of crazy stuff. Like your brother said the other day, and it's true. I never thought about it, but this is a true statement now. They are creating a situation where you are now in a position of pick your own poison. It makes no difference what you pick. All that shit is poison.
Wow.
And it was very unique in terms of looking at how they had dominated their lives in terms of food production. They made sure the colonizers took all the land and rained all the independent farmers out. So you have no basis to grow what you need for food. They control all the major lands that that is geared towards agriculture. They control
all right.
the information. When you talk about agriculture information, scientific information, talking about this whole question of crops development and stuff, they got this shit down to the science where they control everything. So the stuff we put in their body, they know you can have come up with cancer.
Right.
You come up
That's
with
right.
all these damn strange diseases. I mean, you know, just even the idea of we drinking water. You know, I know in the U.S., still put chlorophyll in the water. Everybody know that you put chlorophyll in the water is the basis to, for cancer.
Sure.
Other countries don't put chlorophyll in their water. But they still do here, and the people said nothing. They know sugar is a major part of creating diabetes. But don't you know, look at all the stuff you drink, 75% of that shit is sugar. And then
That's
they put
right.
it on the label and still get away with it. And then you wonder why all of us walk around so big and out of shape and big, look like a damn animal. It's not no accident. It's not no accident we look like pigs. We eating pigs and look like a pig.
We're going to have to do a whole other program just on that one right there. No doubt about it.
Look at your day. We said freedom has the ability and means to control those necessities to life. They even raised the issue, do we have the right to even think independently, just the right to think? The right to know ourselves. When one comes out, you don't need your history, and you don't need to know your history, and they can just tell you, okay, today now, all these books, they are taken out of schools. All these books, they're saying, you no longer can mention the word slavery, you didn't mention the word oppressor. You can't. What the heck is that? You don't need to know about what took place 200 years ago in Africa, but yet you need to know 1,000 years what took place in Europe. But when they can demand that kind of information, they are controlling your thoughts. They are creating you. We are zombies. Clothing, you're talking about textile. Even though we have a material base, but do we really own and produce and make our own clothes?
Yeah.
Do we?
Absolutely not.
Anytime when they want to move around like an animal, they tell you, like when you talk about gentrification, 20 years they say they can let the Negroes live here, and the next 20 years you have to go, and they move you somewhere else. We like
right.
nomads. And this is happening to our people all over the world. So that's what we're talking about, this question of freedom. They're having the ability and the means to do the kind of things that we need to do to survive as a people, as a human being.
All right, Brother Lee. Well, family, I mean, what can we say? The two brothers that you just heard, just as far as I'm concerned, made things quite clear. And as Brother Malcolm has said, make it plain. Brother Lee, thank you so much. I see Sister Sheila's is in queue. I'm going to take a quick call real quick because this person might have a question for you or Brother Haki. Before I let you leave, and then we're going to bring Sister Sheila in, and she's going to close us out for the evening. So, caller, you're at 1196. If you got a quick question or comment, we will certainly give you the opportunity to do that. 1196.
I appreciate you.
Go ahead.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, you are.
My name is L. I appreciate you, Empress Chi. Silicano, peace and greetings to the family. I love what I'm hearing, but at the same time, this is the foundation of my question.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I'm not a Christian, but I acknowledge that there is a lot of ancient texts in that book called the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, honor thy mother and father, that way thy days will be long on the earth. Speaking of our mothers and fathers, that gives us pedigree, lineage, and land rights. We are indigenous, which isn't exactly the proper term, American. Mm-hmm. I am, I say. I can't say who anybody else acknowledges themselves to be. They're a lot of $5 Indians.
Mm-hmm.
The corporation right now is saying if you can go back three generations, you could have, in a sense, sovereignty to the land. If we would take the time to do our ancestry on our own through the census, birth certificates, things of that nature, mm-hmm. we can go back to time immemorial, even though there's no records for it, because in the 50s and the 60s, they went through the American and got our Bibles from our grandparents and gave them the gold leaf ones. But in our Bibles, it was everybody that was born under our family tree. If we take our focus off of what they're doing and claim our rights and heirs to this land, that would separate us from the corporation of the United States, which is a corporation,
mm-hmm.
right? They are body politic, but in reference to a corporation. We are man. We are not human beings. We are man. It's like what it says in the Bible. Even Jesus said, he is the Son of Man. I will accept that because they did him as having blonde hair and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the original seed of the earth. If you look at the sky at night, it's carbon, melanin. If you part the grass on our feral planet, the soil is the same color as our skin, and it's carbon. To catalog and date to see how old anything is on this planet, what do? Carbon date it. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So Africa is the motherland, but this is the fatherland. If you do the knowledge on it, this land rose before Africa. Smithsonian has all the information of the Americas. The pyramids in South America are older than the ones in Africa. No disrespect to Mali and other places.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pyramid in the Grand Canyon. There was a pyramid in Utah. We're mound builders. We're Olmecs. We're so many things. But everybody got us looking at Africa, and Africa is a beautiful place, and we are family. But we have the right to claim this land. The Moors brought the Caucasian, the Ashkenazis here to bankrupt this place. That was their intent, not the Moors, but the Ashkenazis. And they can't do it. Just like in Texas, you could dig, pull the oil out the ground. If you leave it for 3 to 7 years, it will fill with oil again. This landmass is bountiful, Turtle Island. So my question to the brothers are, one, have they did any research in reference to this landmass and who their ancestors are on this landmass? Or two, are they sure which ancestor is African without going to 23andMe or whatever all of those DNA testing things that they commercialize now, where they only get 2 or 3 people in a village. But anyway, they don't have our best interest at heart, just like Planned Parenthood. So that's my question, and I yield.
Oh, well, thank you, brother. Okay, so Brother Haki, Brother Lee, either one of you want to respond to the question?
I'll start first, Brother Lee. Well, listen, no disrespect to the brother, you know, but his information is sort of skewed. If historically, if you talk about anthropologically, then when you talk about the oldest pyramids in the world, they actually exist in South Sudan, not Egypt, not here, certainly not in this landmass. As far as the origin of human beings, you know, one of the things, if I'm hearing the brother correctly, he's saying that prior to the elevation of Africa, that in fact that those such a civilization existed prior to. The problem is that historically, geographically, not just geographically, but just in terms of when you look at it in terms of the meteorological features of societies. At that point in history, we talk about the evolution of human society. At this point, it wasn't suitable for human habitat. Only Africa was suited for human habitat. Africa lies exactly in the center of the world. It was the only place suited for human evolution. So to say that, in fact, that if I'm hearing it correctly, that evolution somehow happened on this continent, and that somehow, you know, that when we talk about origin human beings, that we must talk about in context of human beings originating in this hemisphere. I think that I don't know what you're reading, brother, but that certainly doesn't sound right historically, anthropologically, sociologically, or geologically. It just doesn't, to me, it doesn't gel. It doesn't make any sense. Also, one of the things I think we have to understand that when we start talking about, you know, the rightful place in terms of African people, in terms of claiming their soil in America, one of the things you have to understand is that, you know, there is an argument to be made that, in fact, that the Africans first settled in this landmass long before Europeans knew anything about this landmass. And I have no problem. I wouldn't dispute that. In fact, I've read many books, you know, illuminating that exact point. But the point is that, you know, the people in positions of power understand in terms of that history. And that history has failed to move them in terms of doing that which is right, in terms of namely recognizing the presence of African people in this landmass long before Europeans got here. And also, I think I would also add that, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you start talking, when we talk about in terms of, you know, the dynamics as it exists on this particular continent, one of the things that, you know, there's a dispute in terms of, you know, whether or not the indigenous or so-called indigenous people are in fact, you know, the oldest people on this landmass. Okay, there are people who take the position that no, they're not the oldest; that they evolved from African people or a mixture of African people and other groups. So this notion in terms of, you know, that African people exclusively inhabit this landmass, I think is subject to some dispute. But, you know, either way, the fact that the masses of those people in positions of power understand fully in terms of, you know, Africans' interactions with this particular landmass, you know, long before the European colonizers ever even got here. But I'll close with that and let Brother Lee respond.
Hello?
I would just say this to my brothers. Look, when you look at history and look at this question of how do people go about their liberation, and you look at this question, when we look at problems, we look at this question of quantity versus quality. African people, logically, looking at the situation you're in now, if you're going to make the argument, you think you can use the rationalization of saying Africans were here on this land base first, and therefore we are indigenous people, so we're entitled to this land. Let's just suppose if you're saying that is true, how do you see it that you'll get your liberation just based upon that argument? Where's the power base at that allows the people who took your stuff? Where's the power base to allow the people who took your stuff that will give you the capability of defeating them just off of this argument you will see first and this is yours? How do you move them? How do you weaken them? How do they stay strong? And when you just look at that, the reality of that is, like, even no matter where we at as a people, we are so divided and stuff, we cannot compete against this modern-day force that we call Western imperialism, this modern-day force that we call United States, this modern-day force that we call Europe. Where do they gather their resources and their power from? Strategically, it's over a collective land base. How do they do this stuff? Collecting it from a land base. So you're going to say at this point in time, we got enough people, given how this economy, this society, this world has developed and the stage we're in now, we have enough people to sit there, okay, say, well, the United States is 200 million. How many people do we have here? About 40, 60 million, they say. We have enough strength in numbers alone to take on the established system, the entities that are already in existence in reality. How do you change the dynamic? How do you come with an illogical, philosophical, historical basis that can move the people in a way to allow them to get out of the oppression that they face? That's why still it leaves you in Ephesus offer you that possibility, that only possibility. And why do we think the whole fight about Africa again is for them to recolonize Africa? That image is not based upon what they can do to Africans in this country. It's not based upon what they can do to Africans in Colombia or Africans in Europe. So the whole historical unfolding of the essence of you being able to exist it still leads you back to Africa. So for me, my brother, even when we talk about the Moors and stuff, they may have came over here, but they never, from my understanding, they never claimed this damn territory. So I'm just saying that the logical aspects of looking at how we have evolved into the situation we are in today only offer you one solution, one alternative. The Africa must be the center of everything to unravel all these problems that came as a result of it, where our people are facing globally.
All right.
So that's just my general thought to that.
Well, unfortunately, we do not have enough time to continue this dialogue tonight. Sister Sheila has been in queue for a while, and I don't want to keep her there any longer. But my brothers, I certainly appreciate this conversation. I invite all three of you to come back. If not next week, we can schedule it. My brother, I'm sorry, I did not get your name.
Yeah, my name is L.
Brother L, okay. I do have your number. I would love to have you come back and you know, schedule a time where you, Brother Lee, Brother Haki, and anyone else that wants to have this conversation. These are conversations that need to happen. I certainly have some comments that I would like to make, but again, time will not allow us to do so. But I'll just put it pretty simply and say there's one continent, obviously, that does and can produce the type of minerals and other kinds of things that is sustainable to and for life. And with that said, you know, that's just a basic kind of common sense thing that needs to be looked at. But again, we really don't have time to explore any of that. I truly appreciate all of what you said, Brother Il, and, of course, Brother Lee, Brother Haki. I'm hoping you all can come back and we can open this up and really go deep. I think we need to, because these are conversations that are being had in other circles. And, you know, again, it needs to be, I think, expanded on, and there needs to be greater clarity, and I certainly would like to provide our program, you know, to do that in an intelligent and respectful manner. And I think all of you have shown that thus far. And so, again, I invite you to come back again. Is that cool?
Indeed.
We hear you.
Yes, indeed. I'm here. No, I was on mute. I'm here. Can you hear me? Can I still be heard?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I hear you, brother.
Yes.
All right, very good.
Yes.
So I will contact all three of you in the very near future, and anyone else that might want to join an intelligent conversation, dialogue, and I want to get some sisters in here too. I don't want to just be some brothers, but I need to get some sisters as well. But certainly, you know, we welcome this conversation, and it is very much needed, and I thank all of you again.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get in contact with Chief Warhorse and Phoenix Moon. They're two sisters that are doing land patents in reference to our ancestry on this landmass. I'll try to contact them.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Appreciate that, my brother. All right, looking forward to it.
Ashe.
Ashe, ashe. All right, Brother Lee, Brother Haki, I thank both of you as well. And we will resume this conversation and some similar ones in the very near future.
The intellectual struggle intensifies. Ready for the revolution.
All right, sister. You have a good night. You have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Haki. Let's continue. All right, family. Listen, that was quite I loved it. I thank the brothers. We need to have that conversation, and I'm sure some of you would agree. It's long overdue, and it is a conversation that's being had in many other circles. We haven't had that conversation on our program, at least not any time recently, and so I really appreciate, the brother bringing that up. And, allowing us to venture further, and we shall even go deeper the next time around. All right, family, listen, let's get ready to bring our sister Sheila Brown in. She's been patient. I'm so thankful that she allowed us to continue the dialogue. And now we're going to turn the mic over to her. She's going to close us out for the evening. We're going to talk about, interestingly enough, preparedness. Again, Brother Lee kind of brought it up in terms of we ain't controlling no food, for real. You know, a few of us might be doing some gardening or whatever, but for the most part, as a people, we're not controlling much of anything. And so obviously we need to look at that closer. So without further ado, let's bring in our sister Sheila Brown is in the house. Greetings, my sister.
Greetings, Green. I'm here.
So, yes. Thank you for your patience. That was a really good conversation. What are your thoughts?
It was interesting. I've had some experiences from all angles of that, being with the master teacher, Dr. Malachi Z. York, and having walked through many of those schools and having done the research when he was transitioning us from some of the aspects of my son. He was born in what we call the School of the Moors, and so my son's last name is L as well, and we were transitioning from the cowboy move, which was a strategic and political move to overthrow the fear and anxiety of our sudden and massive presence in the South, definitely not coming down in the garb of the Ansar Allah, but as cowboys, which was a very powerful initiative, but moving over into the indigenous aspect, another aspect of our being. I think it's important that we don't lose sight of it's not or, but and, you may have a 70% pure African blood, if you will, which just really represents human blood. This is no longer a fight over territory. We own all the earth. There is no part of the earth that we don't have indigenous rights to. But it's important to examine all solutions and all arguments intelligently, and to do so with the eye of representing or acknowledging the limitations intelligently and benefits, and using them as needed for the purposes that are most beneficial at the time they might be employed, speaking legally, of course, and culturally and spiritually. All solutions must be brought to the intelligent table. But I'm not here to talk about that tonight, and I don't have too much time because I've got to get ready. I'm going to New York early in the morning, so I just wanted to come on and talk about the emergency preparedness workshop that I would like to invite the audience to on May 31st. From 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. This is going to be a United Nations side event. There is something that's called the second session of the permanent forum on people of African descent. No disrespect intended to the Moors and anyone else who disidentifies with the word African. You can just put the word human there, because this is a human issue, but the term is African on the table right now, and because I am a strategic thinker and mover, I'm going to go with African when I'm going to the permanent forum on people of African descent. And like all tools, like the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey and the Honorable Amy Euphemia Dix Garvey, who I study profusely and fervently as much as I have done Dr. Malachi Z-York and some of my more recent teachers like Dr. Umar Johnson and, of course, you and others, all solutions must be examined. So that being said, I am inviting people to something that is very personal and close to me. I feel personally qualified to speak on the topic, having had such a vast experience with close encounters of the third kind with poverty, both self-induced for the purpose of nation building, not poverty in the sense of what I was doing at the time, that I was building nation in Georgia on 476 acres of land in our own vision and in image and likeness, but in terms of what the world would perceive as something that was counterproductive to one's personal sense of economy, if you will. And so having had that experience in terms of nation building firsthand from the age of 17 and officially 18 up until 28 when I closed my bookstore, and having this interesting encounters with how to survive in a world that people would consider third world conditions, if you will, meaning that what happens if you suddenly found yourself in a state of being in the world that was more akin to the 1920s than to the 2020s? Are you technically, spiritually, theologically, intellectually, and resourcefully prepared to continue life in a way that allows your family to experience dignity, the continuation of the things that sustain life at its most basic need, what I call the nine pillars of preparedness, like food and water and communication, and how to acquire those things, both the skill set and the actual resources and the mindset that one might need to have in a very, very near future. And arguably what Black folk have been dealing with since our inception, if you will, considering the conversation we had today, with those of you who will allow for the possibility that African people, some of whom were our ancestors for sure, the majority of whom were our ancestors, were unwillingly brought to these shores, perhaps finding the company of other indigenous humans or people that very much look like what we call African people today, also in a struggle with a new kind of an enemy. And so our people are not unaccustomed to the conditions that the rest of the world in the so-called first world are now having to contend with as emergency preparedness. And so on the workshop, I'm going to be giving some real practical, conversational, interactive, and critical thinking modalities of learning that will answer some questions like, what does it mean to be prepared? What skills and resources were constantly available to our great-great-great-grandparents that we no longer have at our ready disposal today? Of course, there are always some, but the majority of whom don't. And who are the players that are involved in this orchestrated display of the three words crisis, emergency, and disaster? What do those three words mean? They're often used interchangeably, but many of them have very important distinctions, both legally and in the sense of politically, in terms of the powers that are invoked when you hear terms like emergency, orders, or even terms that are triggered by natural or man-made disasters in terms of the governmental powers that might dictate where you move to, if you are allowed to stand in your place, if there were, let's say, a wildfire, right? And so how do we, especially women of African descent, if you will, how do we women who are often having to not only contend with our own basic needs for food, clothing, water, shelter, communication, security, oftentimes alone, how do we adjust our mindset and our purses for this unfortunately new reality for some, old reality for others, in a way that's intelligent and that allows you to support yourself and your family? And I say that very personally because I have had some bouts with experiences that some people would consider homelessness. I've definitely been hungry, not of my own volition. I've fasted, but I've also experienced hunger. I've experienced the dehumanization that comes along with not having your needs met, and the anxiousness and anxiety associated with having your children or your child look to you both out of desire and frustration for not having what seems to come naturally to others. So some very practical things that are going to cover or be covered around this very important topic of water. I'm going to be introducing some important agencies that are dictating what the future looks like, whether you are a Moor or an African. We are all going to be impacted by some organizations and agencies and NGOs and organizations and groupings and think tanks that some of us don't even know the names of, that we find ourselves often responding to because they are in control of the global politics and economies, and they drive what looks like to us disasters, crises, emergencies, and whether that trickles down. People often talk about the economy and its vibrancy trickling down, and that's not the reality for many people, but one thing Black folk do get to experience trickle down is the pain, right? And so this pain is what I want to help us navigate, because I have so expertly had to navigate it in my short 46 years on this planet by divine design, and survived it, and have some very important insights to share. I'm coming from the perspective of a member of the Nuwapia Nation for the first 10 years of my adult life, as an attorney licensed in the state of Texas for the next 10 years and on, as a sister who is heavily involved in the teachings of global, what we know today as Pan-Africanism, which was global African liberation under the teachings of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, may his soul be at peace and power, and the teachings of the Honorable Amy Euphemia Jakes Garvey, as she would like to be called, and also from the perspective of our ancestors who used the four elements of air, fire, earth, and water to secure both freedom and health. So there's some important things that I humbly would advise people who are concerned about the conditions of the world and where it's going and where they fit in it, and at least walking away with some tools, some definitions, some potential resources on how to organize, how to do bulk buying. I've been doing bulk buying for the last decade. There are some important organizations and entities and religious groups. I'm going to teach people exactly how much food it is estimated that each person in the household should have, provide some ideas for how to properly store, preserve, purify water, and some of the more practical things that are going to be confronting us right now and right tomorrow. So thank you for letting me do that little PSA, and prayerfully someone out there in the listening world heard and may find it appropriate to join. And if anyone does want to join this very promising, what I promise to be interactive at the very least and informative and the most life-changing, potentially at the most, I should say, mind-opening workshop that the Most High is affording me an opportunity to share on a global platform internationally is to reach out to me by texting the word workshop to the number 202-952-6123, and I will send you the link to register on Zoom. This is being hosted by the International Civil Society Working Group on the Permanent Forum, or for the Permanent Forum of People of African Descent, and everyone is invited regardless of what what pronoun you will, I'm terrible like that, but what pronoun you like to refer yourself to. This is for the human.
Oh, gosh, no, not that.
No. I mean, I don't mean pronoun in the terms of gender, but I mean pronoun in terms of African or,
oh,
or more.
Okay.
That was light, but I didn't mean to confuse. But those are pronouns as well. I guess I was trying to argue about them. Never mind.
Okay.
It didn't come out well. But the pronouns in terms of how we identify ourselves, this is for all African people, all people of H-U-E, human descent.
Right, right.
And for... And for those of us who identify with whatever aspects of the indigenous population we might reside in, arguably the entire globe belongs to us. And so I find myself very happily content with being a human on earth, but also recognizing that politically much has been done under the auspices of the terms African, even in those limited aspects of it. I'm more interested in results and solutions. We have mastered the art of the problem. That was done in the early 1920s, but you have come along with the ability to actually implement powerful global changes that will impact the women and the children of this world that we now live in. And so until that happens, you might want to join my emergency workshop, sis and brothers, so that we can figure out how we eat, so that we can live and fight another 10, 20, 30 years, centuries, and millennia. That's all I have to say.
Ashe, ashe. And so, again, sister, please give the telephone number and or if there's an email address so that they can get that. And we will also be sending it out, family. If you're already on our e-list, you will be getting the flyer and the information that you can also send out as well. So, Sister Sheila, and by the way, before Sister Sheila does that, we love how she and other sisters and brothers are what I call ambidextrous mentally and in action. And what I mean by that is, as you can tell, what's going on in this kind of new, or if not new, the next step of our evolution. I don't even say revolution because I don't think folks are ready for that one. So I deal with evolution. But what's happening from a more holistic perspective is, Sister Sheila is, by the way, professionally a lawyer. Now, those of you who understand what I'm going to say, then, you know, please feel free to pass it on. And that's this. Some of us were taught that you can have whatever profession you want to have as long as you know and understand and embrace your foundation. And so we are intelligent enough to get the information that we need to get in whatever circle we need to go into without that tainting or disrupting who we really are. Now, some folks can't do that, obviously, but some are here to let it be known and made clear that the day has come where that won't be so ambiguous. And that has happened before. We've seen the examples, of course, with the great Paul Robeson. To fast forward, if any of you have known of a brother by the name of Mayor Chokwe Lumumba, well, check out his history and what he was doing before he mysteriously died. My point is,
we know how to walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, and I just want to point that out because Sister did not say that she was a licensed attorney. So she's not only coming to us in the context of a sister, an African woman, a Pan-Africanist, she's also able to dissect these other components and break that down too. Okay, that was my sidebar. So once again, Sister, please give the telephone number in, or if there's an email address, because I know some folks like email as well, if you want to make that available.
Yeah, I don't have my automation set up right now, but I will probably by Saturday. But if someone texts the word workshop.
Okay.
To 202-952-6123, I will forward them the link to the registration for my workshop. It's going to be really exciting. I'm also a certified professional development trainer, but even before that, I could hold my own in front of a group because I studied how to teach and persuade and influence under the master teacher, Dr. Malachi Z. York. The certification is just for the Negroes who require such in order
right,
to be considered
right.
valid in the areas that I've been moving in. But I can get the information out to those individuals who want to learn more or to register for the workshop. And I do the workshop on my own, so this won't be the last time. I usually charge for my workshop, but because of the times that we're in and because emergency preparedness has been framed in terms of something that is other than something that people of African descent or even of whatever we identify as don't necessarily embrace as a global thought process, as a part of an ordinary lifestyle, as something outside of that to many of us. And arguably and frighteningly, some people will wish it away because to even think about emergencies in some circles is a mindset blight, right? Like it's like, oh, you're inviting these negative experiences. Well, I don't think Mother Harriet Tubman or the Honorable Frederick Douglass or the Honorable Harriet Jacobs were thinking themselves in slavery. They found themselves in that before they even were able to process a thought. So we have to be really, really careful about these luxurious forms of explaining away the political and economic and social realities of oppression that exist amongst our people and our people indigenously wherever we are. And so I would just encourage people to open their minds and find the commonalities in what I'm trying to say in my spirit of humility and all seriousness. As a mother, it is very important, particularly for women, because, you know, we have a lot to be concerned about. Our chief enemy is not going to be at the face knocking at the door. It's not going to be white men initially and white women. It is going to be hungry and angry and disambiguous looking black folk who have not done the work of mental and physical and spiritual discipline required to withstand the times that will challenge everything that we think we know about the way the world will be moving. So there's a lot of moving parts to this, but because this is a UN event, I will be on Neely Fuller Code, and if you have not studied Neely Fuller, just do a quick search. I will be on code, but those of you who have an ear should be hearing. There's some important messages, and some of it might sound biblical, some of it might just sound practical. Wherever you get in, fit in, but I have some important information to share, and I want people to take advantage of this free workshop that I'm offering and connect and share the information with others. Even if you don't need it, you know, there's a grandmama who's taking care of some grandkids who needs to know some very important things about the way the world is moving around water and around food, and that there's some things that she or he, as grandparents, taking care of little ones, can do to prepare themselves mentally and with skill sets to help purify water, to help address what are the threats to water, whether those are parasites, bacteria, viruses, and what household items that she might, he or she might have in their home right now could be used to help address some of those. And when the three major processes, for example, of boiling water, disinfecting water, filtering water, even those three are not sufficient under certain circumstances. So this will promise to not waste your time, but to leave even the most studious of preppers, if you will, with some more information, if nothing else, a refresher on what you already know. And so thank you so much for your time. My email address is not as effective considering the speed at which this is happening, but my email address is info@SheilaBrownSpeaks. And that phone number that I gave, it's not a calling number. It's just a number for texting.
All right. Thank you, my sister and family. Certainly being more prepared to deal with disaster, to deal with emergencies. I mean, we just saw COVID. How many people thought that was going to happen the way it happened? So we need to see the writing is on the wall, and we better act like we know. With that said, I want to thank everyone again for tuning into this segment of New Day. I want to thank, of course, Sister Sheila Brown for sharing that information. And again, check it out. I mean, you're not going to get an opportunity like this. Believe me, I saw it. I saw her, one of her initial presentations, and it is off the hook, as they say, off the chain. It's not just some little poo-put stuff, you know, that you normally get. It is thorough, well done, and I'm telling you, you will get a lot from it, rest assured. I want to also thank Brother, oh my gosh, Hakeem, much love and respect. And of course, Brother Eel as well. Look forward to them coming back on in the very near future. And of course, Brother Lee, Africa on the Move. Tomorrow, we will be doing a special edition, not so much of New Day, but we started something here in Philly called Philly Black History. What we've learned is that our people in this city, for whatever reason, don't feel the necessity to document, to share, to educate about the history of black folks in Philadelphia. So we're changing that and making sure that there is now a special project to document, to educate, to teach, to uphold, and to advance great history and legacy of our people in this city, actually in the state of Pennsylvania. And this is one of the initiatives that MWM is putting forward as we move forward with the universal movement of the Million Woman March. One of the initiatives is in every state that there is a project that focuses on documenting and educating our own people about our history. Of course, on an international level, but right in your community. How about that? What's the history of your community? So tomorrow we'll be doing one of the first sessions here on Zoom, 7:30. If you are interested and you want to know more about that and upcoming sessions that will be happening for the city of Baltimore, D.C., Detroit, Chicago, yep, we have so far 7 cities that we will launch this particular project. You can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can text me at 267-636-3802. 7:30 tomorrow we'll be doing that. And, of course, with the Million Woman World March coming, there are meetings that will begin next week. For folks who want to be involved on the national level, now is the time to get involved. The 1 in a Million membership drive is now in effect. We look to get 1 million members. Tell you more about that next week. But in the meantime, if you want more information about getting involved, membership, programs, what have you, again, email us at nationalmwm@aol.com or text me at 267-636-3802. Again, we thank everyone for tuning in to this segment of New Day. Remember, free Mumia, Abu Jamal, free them all. Till next time, y'all know what we say. There can be no justice. There can be no peace if y'all don't get up and stand up. Thank you, Sister Sheila. Talk to you later.
Don't give up the fight. Life is your right. Get up, stand up. You can't give up the fight. Stand up on your right. Lord, Lord. Get up, stand up. Keep on loving on. Don't give up the fight. Yeah. The sick and tired of the easy kissing game, dying to go to heaven in the Jesus name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light. What you we gonna stand up for? Yeah, yeah, so you better get up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up for your rights. Stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up, stand up, stand up, stand up for your life. Get up, stand 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 up,